This evening, we want to discuss the subject that we find in 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, verses 1 through 16. And this the Apostle Paul says, "Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Christ. Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things, and keep the ordinances as I delivered them to you. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of every woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head. But every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered, dishonoreth her head. For that is even all one, as if she were shaven. For if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in the Lord. For as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of God. Judge in yourselves, is it comely that a woman pray unto God uncovered? Doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him? But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. But if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God." And this is something that Paul begins to talk about, is an interesting subject. It's not only interesting for the women, but it's interesting for the men. It's interesting for the entire church. It's one of those things that I'm sure that if you approach somebody on the street today, if you went up to a woman who had absolutely no teaching in the Bible, didn't know very much about it at all, then you walk up to her and said, "You know, you're not supposed to cut your hair, you're supposed to let it grow long," she would probably give you a very puzzled look. She wouldn't understand why it is when most people in society today will cut or style their hair or wear it any way that they want to, why is it then that you would say such a thing that she should not cut her hair? So you see that we must understand what it is we're being asked to do. And I think to understand this, we need to go back and look at why Paul wrote this in the first place. Let us go back to Corinthians' letter. Now let us look at why did Paul write the Corinthian letter, and when did he write it? Well, he wrote it somewhere around the year A.D. in 55. Paul had been at Corinth, that's the city that he wrote this letter to, and he had been there about 1.5 years. He established a congregation there, and then as Paul was to do, he went about and left there to travel to go to other places to establish more congregations. As he is gone, and it hasn't been very long, he's only been gone about a few months or a year, you can imagine that once he left here and went somewhere else to establish another congregation, things begin to happen. That's the whole reason for this letter being written. As Paul has been wrote to, he has been asked and informed about things that are happening at Corinth. Now remember what he says here. He says, "Remember the ordinances and keep them." All right? "Remember those things I taught you and keep them," because what had happened was they had stopped keeping some of these ordinances. They had stopped doing some of the things that Paul had asked them to do. They had started doing things they should not be doing. In other words, Satan was busily at work there at the church at Corinth, trying his best to take people away from Christ, trying to come in there and cause discord, division, and problems there at Corinth. If you think that this is not the case, you go back and read some of the early church writings. I'm talking about people who wrote letters after the apostles were gone. There was one individual named Tertullian who wrote in the first 100 years of the church. And he writes an article about baptism. And in his letter about baptism, he talks about a woman who arose on the scene that started teaching people they did not need to be baptized to be saved. So if you think that's just a new idea today, it's not a new idea today. You can find it written about within the first 100 years of the church. So Paul then has some things that are sent to his attention, and they want Paul to address them. Let us read a little bit out of each chapter. We're going to read a verse or two out of each chapter up to this point to get the idea about why Paul is writing this Corinthian letter and why would Paul discuss such a subject as the length of a woman's hair. Well, in 1 Corinthians 1, 10 and 11, Paul says, "Now I beseech you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye all speak the same thing, that there be no divisions among you, but that ye be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. For it hath been declared unto me of you, my brethren, by them which are of the house of Chloe, that there are contentions among you." So now Paul says, okay, I've received a letter that came from the house of Chloe, who is a person there at Corinth. It says unto me that there are contentions there amongst you people at Corinth. In other words, you're not getting along. Paul later wrote, as he said, "I hear there be divisions among you, and I partly believe it." Now, they had begun to separate themselves into different cliques. That's what had begun to happen. Some would shun other ones. It got to the point to where some would say, "Well, I was baptized by Apollos, or I was baptized by Paul or Cephas or somebody else, and because of that, I then am more better off than you because of who baptized me." And you see, they begin to start these little cliques among themselves, thinking one's better than the other, or one has an advantage over the other. They would leave some out. They wouldn't even associate with some that were in the church. So Paul's writing now to address these things he's heard about, to tell them about them, to straighten them out. It is such a strong letter that Paul can't wait until he hears back about how this letter goes to them. As he sends this letter to them, Titus is sent over there to Corinth to take their treasure, their gift, that they're going to give to the church at Jerusalem. While he is there, he comes back to Paul in the same year, just later on, and tells him, "Look, they received your first letter, and when they received it, they repented of it. There are things they had done." Paul felt so good about it, he wrote 2 Corinthians while he was at Ephesus here. Now, in 1 Corinthians, the 4th chapter, in verse 1, we get the next idea of what Paul begins to talk about to him as a problem. "Let a man so account of us as the ministers of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God." Paul says, all right. He says, "I want you people there to understand that we are the ministers of Christ and we are the stewards of the mysteries of God to give them unto you." In other words, you're not the teachers, you're the learners. Paul says, "I'm a teacher." Those people that were with him, Barnabas, Titus, and others, they're teachers. They know what you need to learn, and we're stewards of these mysteries to teach you. But you yourselves need someone to teach you. You are learners and not teachers, because they have thought to themselves, well, we'll just not listen to Paul and what he has to say, or we'll not listen to someone else. We'll just go about it our own way. In the next chapter, the 5th chapter, verse 1, "It is reported commonly that there is fornication among you, and such fornication as is not so much as named among the Gentiles, that one should have his father's wife." Paul says, all right, he says, here's something else I've been told. Now you people are drifting off over there into fornication. And he says, you know, he says, not only that, but you have a terrible situation there. You have a man who's committing fornication with his father's wife. In other words, should have been his stepmother. He says, now that's just even unheard of among the Gentiles. So because he's been informed about this situation, Paul's now writing to them about it to help them to straighten it out. In the 6th chapter, dare any of you having a matter against another go to the law before the unjust and not before the saints? Well, now what was happening? Well, he found out that these people were taking others to the courts of the law of the land to settle their matters that they had amongst each other or against each other, rather than going to the church and presenting their case to the church and letting the church preside over the church and start straightening people out. In other words, governing their own people. If you're not of the world, Paul says, then what business do you have going to the courts of the land? You don't need to be going there when it's against one another. You need to be settling those matters yourself, and the church needs to be assisting. In the 7th chapter, verses 1 and 2, now concerning the things whereof ye wrote unto me, again, here's something else that was written unto him. It is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Paul says, all right. He says, now another thing you wrote unto me about is this situation of fornication and the situation of adultery. He addresses it in the 7th chapter. He talks about men and women being married and being separated and being married again. And he covers that then in the 7th chapter. In the 8th chapter, now as touching things offered unto idols, we know that we have all knowledge. Knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. Paul now is talking to them about things that have been offered to idols down there in the marketplace that they'd go buy the meat of, and then they would go in home and they would eat it, and it was offending some of them, and some of them were perhaps taking it too far and participating in the feast of the sacrifices that were done unto idols. Then in 1 Corinthians 9, 1 and 2, am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are ye not my work in the Lord? If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you, for the seal of mine apostleship are ye in the Lord. Now Paul addresses this point that evidently now that he had left, some had puffed themselves up and had begun to think, well, you know what? Paul, what business does he have telling us what we need to do? By what authority? Paul's now telling them, well, I'm an apostle and I have all the authority in the world to tell you what you need to be doing in the Lord. In the 10th chapter, he says, moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. He's talking here about how the people were baptized unto Moses, and these people now are baptized unto Christ, and that they are not baptized, it didn't matter who did the baptism, but that they, of course, would be the same baptized, no matter who did it for them. So these are some of the things now that we see that Paul is addressing. So then, when we get to the 11th chapter, Paul now picks up the issue of a woman's hair. Why would he do that? Well, the same reason he did these other issues we find in the first 10 chapters. Because it's something he's been written about. It's something that somebody's telling him something about, and now Paul has to write something on the subject and straighten it out. Remember, he's already given them these ordinances. They're just falling away from them, and they're not remembering them. Thank goodness that Corinth had some of its problems, or else we may not have the answers to many of these things we have today. So let us look at the situation of Corinth that would have brought Paul to write this subject. One, Corinth was a city. It was a metropolis. It was the largest city in Greece. At the time in which Paul is preaching there, it's probably at one of its great heights. People say that there would have been something like 200,000 free people that were citizens of the city of Corinth. It was on a main port down on the Mediterranean Sea. And ships, of course, would come into it. And besides the 200,000 people that lived there, there probably was another 200,000 slaves, and there probably was another great number of people who were always just visiting or passing through the place. Up on the highest hill at Corinth, up on their highest hill was a temple. That temple was built to the goddess Aphrodite. She was the goddess of fertility. It was a city that lied in the worst type of sin that you could imagine. Because, you know, when men created their own gods, their gods were no better off than they were. They had human frailties, and they had human desires, and they were like their own selves. So they then, when they invented or created their gods, such as the goddess Aphrodite, then it became to them that, of course, they were people who wanted to have these huge orgies, these great parties in which sexual behaviors were done in. And it was a city that was full of this kind of behavior. Paul, when he went there, of course, he had to deal with that, and he had to try to get these people away from that and teach them that's not the moral way to live, that's not a good way to live, and it's a way of sin and iniquity. There were other temples there, and there were other types of gods. But in this one temple, it is said that there were 1,000 prostitutes for this goddess in her service. These women would live in this temple, and of course men would go up there and they would prostitute themselves, and of course they would go up and they would participate in all these matters that went on in that temple, and then the money that they made would go back into the support of the temple and the priesthood of the temple and in support of themselves. These women had a very distinct mark about them. By now you probably know what that is. Their hair was very short, if not completely shaven off. They were prostitutes for a goddess, a false god, lived in idolatry, practiced wickedness, sin, iniquity, and all kinds of evil doings. And the mark that set them apart from the rest of the women of the city was that they cut their hair. Now Paul, evidently somebody there at Corinth, began to get the idea that women needed to cut their hair as a mark that they were servants of that god, or shave their head. Why do you think Paul says here, "We have no such custom"? That's why he says that. It's not our custom to do that. That's a worldly thing. It's not what the church does, he says. We don't go for cutting the hair. We don't go for shaving the head. But Paul explains to him even greater than that why that is. Not just a matter of because it's not our custom or because we don't do things like the rest of the world, but Paul goes into great detail and to great extent teaching the women, the men, and everyone else why it is that we're not acting like these prostitutes over here in the temple of the goddess Aphrodite. Or why we're not acting like the rest of these pagan worshipers that are running around this city. Would it be any different when Paul says we don't have such things as prostitution simply because that paganism has it? We don't have it. It's not the way we are. We're not that kind of people. You know, the hair is written of only a few times in the Scriptures. In 1 Timothy 2 and 9, he says, "In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array." Here he's meaning that a woman is not to have hair that is to be shown off in the sense that she would have gold and all kind of crowns and all kind of beauties and ornaments and things like that woven within it to bring attention to herself. 1 Peter 3 and 3 says, "Who's adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and wearing of gold or putting on of apparel." Paul says it's not the outward appearance that God is so much interested in a woman or in a man either, but it's in the inner person, the inner woman. He says don't let it be the outward appearance of the adorning there. He says let it be the inward part. But you know, the hair has always been something that people throughout society and throughout time have used as some sort of a fashion statement. If you go back to Egypt, Egypt had some pretty peculiar ways. You can look at their pictures of Egypt, or you can look at their paintings, and you can look at their statues. They would shave the heads of the young boys to where they had nothing but one lock that grew out the side of their head. They would sometimes shave the heads of all the slaves, whether men or women. It was okay to just do it in all kind of fashions, and that's what it was. It was a fashion statement. It was no different there in Greece or in any other parts of the world, and it's no different here today. It's become a fashion statement. It has become looked upon as being something that is of beauty to the eye of the beholder, but not looking at it from the beauty from the eye of God, but from the eye of the beholder. Revelations 9 and 8 says, "And they had the hair as the hair of women, and their teeth was as the teeth of lions." Here when he is explaining that these riders that come on these horses or these scorpions, and I believe that he's talking here about the Muslims that were going to invade that part of the world at that time, and they, of course, were men that had long hair. They didn't believe in cutting their hair. Now, notice what it says here. They had hair as the hair of women. Well, then something has to be different between the hair that's the hair of women and the hair that's the hair of men for this statement to exist. That's where Paul says, "Doth not nature itself teach you?" Nature teaches you something here, he says. And what it's teaching you is that a man has short hair and that a woman has long hair. Well, this scripture would be hard to write in today's society, would it not? To say they had hair as the hair of women doesn't mean a whole lot today because it doesn't look much different than most of the men's hair that you see sometimes. Let us back up and look at what Paul said. Now we know who Paul's writing to, and now we know why he wrote it. I think it's important to know why he wrote it. He wrote it to them because these people in this city had a distinct mark in worshiping the paganistic god Aphrodite, and the women cut their hair. Paul's addressing this issue with the church. First, he tells them in verse 1, and we're going to cover the text. He says, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1, "Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Christ." So Paul's telling them, look, if I follow Christ, follow me. If I ain't following Christ, don't follow me. We're supposed to be following Christ. So Paul says, you can follow me even as I am following Christ. He says, "Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the ordinances as I delivered them unto you." All right, I want you to keep these things that I taught you while I was there. It would be wonderful if we had all of that, but we don't. Even in 2 Thessalonians, where Paul talked about the falling away that would come and the man of sin would be revealed, Paul says, "Don't you know that when I was with you, I told you these things?" It would have been wonderful to have had all of that, but we don't. We have what God wants us to have. We have the knowledge and the things He wants us and feels like we can handle. So Paul is now saying, look, keep these ordinances just as I gave them to you. Don't change them. All right, verse 3. "I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of every woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God." All right, he says, now look. He says, if you want to talk about who's in charge, he says, first of all, he says, this is the order in which all things go. He says, you have God, you have Christ, you have man, and you have woman. He goes into the extent to begin to teach here that the man is not of the woman, but the woman is of the man. Well, what's he referring to? Well, he's referring back here to the Old Testament time, to our father and our mother in the beginning, Adam and Eve. Adam was the first one created. Eve wasn't on the scene. But God saw that he saw that Adam was lonely. He saw that Adam needed a helpmate, someone to carry the load with him. And so he took a rib from Adam, and then he made him a helpmate, and that was Eve. So he says, see, the man was first, then the woman. The woman wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the man. But the man today, today's society, today's life, the man can't come unless a woman bears a child. So he says, you see how both are of each other, and do you see how both of these are of God? That's what he's saying. He's trying to put it all in perspective. So he tells them, now this is the order of things. These men that want to puff themselves up want to think that they have some sort of position. Remember this, man, your head is Christ. You answer to Him. Christ answers to God. But you, man, answer to Christ. He's your head. He's your leader. He's your Lord, your master, your king. And you answer to Him. Don't ever forget that, he's trying to teach them. So don't try to puff yourself up as if you're someone who's going to lead a bunch of people or you're going to be the king over a bunch of people. You have one, and that's Jesus Christ. All right, so then in verse 4 he says, "Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head." All right, who's his head? Christ. So if a man prays or prophesies covering his head, then he is dishonoring his head, which is Christ. Now, what's the reference here? Well, Paul says up here on top of the shoulders, you see, there's his head sits there. Some of us, as you know, use it for a hat rack. Others use it for things that are much more important. But it sits up there as a head. Now, that begins to represent something. And Paul says, if you cover that head, man, you're going to dishonor your head if you pray or you prophesy. In other words, don't cover it. We're not up here with veils over our heads or hats on our heads when we're preaching or when we're praying or conducting services in the Lord's house or when we're at home. So that matter goes, if we're doing any of the Lord's business, we're not covering our head there either. Because he says if we cover our head, it's the same as covering Christ, and we dishonor our head, or we're going to dishonor Christ by so doing. For if the woman be not covered, or verse 5, but every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered dishonoreth her head, for that is even all one as if she were shaven. So that's how we know he's talking about this head up here and this head here. So if a woman prays without her head covered, she dishonoreth her head. So you say, okay, he's talking about this covering now. How is she to cover it? How? How is she to cover her head so that she can pray or prophesy? A man can't cover his. If he does, he dishonors his head. A woman must cover her head, or she dishonors her head. So how does she cover it? Well, now Paul goes to say, verse 6, for if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. Okay? So he says, he's looking at these words here. He's looking at the word shorn, he's looking at the word shaven, and he's looking at the word covered. He says, okay, if she is going to be shorn, she might as well be shaven. If a woman's going to have her hair cut, she might as well have it so that she's bald, basically, is what he's saying. Because she won't be covered. So what's he talking about? He's talking about the hair. What else can you shave, and what else can you shorn? He's talking about her hair. And what he's saying is her hair, as he says later in the chapter here, her hair was given her for a covering. So that's her covering. So if she cuts it or shaves it, she's not covered. And if she's not covered, she cannot pray, she cannot prophesy, she will dishonor her head. If she cuts it at all, she will basically dishonor her head. Verse 7, for a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and the glory of God, but the woman the glory of man. Now, God set it up this way. He put it in this order. We didn't. God did. God made man first. We didn't. He decided to make man first. He knew he would make man a woman. God did it in this fashion and in this way. So he says that because the woman is of the man, then if the man has his head covered, it's not right. He's not supposed to do that. Okay. If he covers his head, he can't, because he's the image and the glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man, because she was created from the rib from Adam's side. Verse 8, for the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. We already talked about that. The man was created first, then the woman. Verse 9, neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. That's what we talked about. The woman was created for a helpmate for the man. In verse 10, for this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels. All right. So now Paul says, all right, since the woman was created second, she's been placed here as this position in life, she must have power on her head. And then he mentions something peculiar. He says, because of the angels. Well, I got to admit, I don't know that I know fully all of what Paul's talking about there. I think he's talking about something that's beyond my realm, truly, of full understanding when he talks about because of the angels. I know that he's teaching that the woman is to have her head covered, and that covering is a power that's upon her head, and I know that when her head is covered, she covers man, so she's able to pray to God through Jesus Christ, just like she's supposed to. I know that, and that's what that covering does. Why? Because of the angels? Well, some writers have said it's because that way the angels, they look and they see the subjection and they see the order of things as they ought to be. Because up there in heaven, you see, there's an order of things. There's God, there's Jesus Christ on His right hand. There are archangels, there's other angels, there's other creatures and other beings up there as well, the cherubims and the seraphims and those others that we read about and the elders that we read about in Revelations. They're all up there. So because they're all angelic creatures and there is an order of those things, then I suppose that what He is talking about is that the woman has this power on her head, and that way the angels can see that the order exists that God has put into place. All right. In verse 11, nevertheless, neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in the Lord. Okay, we can't have men today if we don't have women, because women bear children. But the woman wouldn't be here if it hadn't been for the man that was here first. So they're both worked together. Verse 12, for as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of God. Okay, the woman was made from the man. The man, though, is born of the woman. All things are of God. He's just putting it in context here. He's just showing us how nature and all things begin to work. Now, he says, verse 13, judge in yourselves. He's asking them something. Now that they know the situation, that in Corinth you have prostitute women, you have women who are worshiping in the temple of Aphrodite that shave their heads, the distinct mark that they are a prostitute for that particular god or goddess. Judge in yourselves. Now he asks you this question, is it comely that a woman pray unto God uncovered? Would it be comely then that a woman with her head uncovered pray to God? Well, of course, the answer to that would be, it would be uncomely. Verse 14, doth not nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him? But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. Okay, notice, he now says the hair was given for a covering. And here's something else he says. Her hair is given to her for glory. And this is where the world comes in and messes things all up. Remember that style we talked about? Remember how you go back to the Egyptian days and the Roman days and the early days of the Victorian era and all that, and you see all these fancy hairdos and wigs and basically ornaments and things of this nature as some kind of a fashion statement? Because society or culture would have it that for a woman to look beautiful, then she's got to look this certain way or do these certain things. But you got to remember something. If you're a godly woman, a Christian woman, you're not of this world. You're not of it. Just the same as the man is not of it. If he is a godly man and if he's a child of God, we're not of this world. The laws and the things that govern this world do not govern us. Yes, we live according to the laws of the land as long as they don't prevent us from being the Christian that we ought to be. But as far as the culture, as far as many of those things go, they don't pertain to you and me because we're not of this world. So what the world might think is pretty and okay, God might not necessarily see it the same way. God says that to Him what is beautiful, to Him what is glory, is a woman's hair. So, it's not really a matter of you looking at it from the worldly eyes, but look at it from God's. He's the one that gave it to you. God's the one who made nature in the way in which He made it, so that you can see that by nature it is a shame if a man have long hair. If a man grows his hair long, it's a shame. But if a woman grows her hair long, it is a beauty. It's a glory to her. It's a gift from God. It may be the distinctive mark on you that just causes someone else to ask you why. It may be the distinctive mark just that somebody says to you, why don't you cut your hair, or why is your hair so long? And give you the opportunity to explain it. It's a gift from God. In your obedience to God, you say, I will not destroy this gift. In your obedience to God, you say that this is what God has given me for my glory. As long as it's long, reflects that glory back to Him. It's no different than other good works that a person does. If a man goes out there and starts a congregation, starts teaching people and bringing them to Christ, the work that he's doing sends glory to God because people are turning their lives around and acting like they should. It's no different than that a woman have long hair. It's a glory. And that glory is not only for her, but it's something that she shares back to God. Now in verse 16, but if any man seem to be contentious, if he's argumentative about the subject, now that I've written it to you, Paul says, we have no such custom. Again, why is he talking about it being a custom of cutting of a woman's hair? Because it was the custom of those who worship pagan gods. And he says, don't look like them. Don't be like them. Separate yourselves from them. Because you have no part with them. Neither the churches of God. Not just at Corinth, he said, but all of them. Now you may say to yourselves, well, we don't have temples to the goddess Aphrodite today. And we don't have such circumstances and situations as Paul writes about here. No. We may not have things exactly like Paul writes about, but what the Bible tells us is timely, and it doesn't wane, falter, or go away. Because if we were to say, okay, the situation doesn't exist the same today, so we'll do away with 1 Corinthians 11 verses 1 through 16, well then what other part of the Bible could we very well say we would do away with and won't have it either? So as you can see, it still pertains today. The woman's hair is still her glory today. For a woman to pray uncovered is a shame. For a woman to have cut hair is a shame. She will dishonor her head. For a man to have long hair, it is a shame. For a man to pray or prophesy with his head covered, it dishonoreth his head. That has never changed. But now you want to know, really, why Paul wrote what he wrote. That's why he wrote it. That's why the subject of a woman's hair is in 1 Corinthians. Now, the word that he uses here, long, comes from a Greek word, and it means long hair, actually, because the word long here, and really long hair, comes from the same word. It's not two words that's used. Our translation has it as two words, so that we can understand it. But the word that was used was komeo. And that word means a letting the hair grow long. Now that's what it means. That's the word. If you were to be reading the Greek, you wouldn't necessarily read long hair, you'd read this word. But this word means these two words combined. Let the hair grow long. Well, how long is long? As long as it'll grow. If you start getting into semantics and you start thinking, well, my hair is longer than this person's, well, does that make it long in the eyes of God? If you start saying my hair is longer than this person's, does that make it long in the eyes of God? How will it be long in the eyes of God? How will it be a glory that God has given you, a gift that He's given to you, that you have, and it's yours? And it's yours to worship Him with. Well, then it has to be uncut. It has to be long. Let it grow that way. Nature, Paul says, and you know nature is a wonderful teacher. Nature itself teacheth you that if a man have long hair, it's a shame. You know, nature teaches us a lot of things. Romans 1:26 says, for this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for their women did change the natural use into that which is against their nature. In other words, what was a woman designed to do? She was designed to be a helpmate for man. She was designed to be a childbearer, but women had changed that and had become women who were as harlots or prostitutes, as the Bible puts them. They had become women who were homosexuals as well. They had left what nature had intended and taught for women to be like. And so has man. But nature teaches us certain things. Wasn't it stupid for man to make a golden calf and say, this is our God? Wasn't it stupid for man to take a fish and put it up on a pole and say, this is our God? When man is the highest creature on this earth, and he would take a lower creature than himself and say, this is our God? How stupid do you think that is? And we think that's pretty stupid. Why? Because couldn't nature itself even teach you that man is greater than these other creatures? And if he's greater than these other creatures, then whoever his God is greater than he is. But because of man's stupidness and ignorance, and not wanting to learn from nature, didn't look at it. Romans 2:14, for when the Gentiles which have not the law do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law are a law unto themselves. Paul says the Gentiles didn't have the Mosaical law, but yet they did things that were in that law. Why? Because of nature. Nature taught them to. A powerful teacher. Well, nature also teaches us about the hair. It teaches us that for a man to have it long, it's a shame. But a woman to have it long, it's a glory. It's yours. It's a gift from God. Now you know why Paul told these Corinthians what he did. And now you know today why it is we do what we are supposed to do. There be one this evening. Won't you come while we stand and sing?